Hello, Pisces, and welcome to Reckoning for the Faithful, your 2025 spring reading from Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer, here with a close look at the astrology of the spring of 2025. This also resonates and rings lots of bells with the astrology of the spring of 2026, so we'll be taking a look ahead that far, but really I am focusing on the way that the events, particularly in Aries and Pisces, reflect on you and reflect in your natal chart. We'll bring your chart in to the scene in a moment. But first, I want to make contact with the fact that for any person who is vaguely sensitive and has any sense of their own humanity, these are very difficult times to be living in. I know enough about Western culture and American culture to know that it's always kind of a frenetic roller coaster ride. We've always seemed very busy. We've always seemed like we've had too much going on. You know, we've always seemed like, you know, how much more can we possibly handle? But at the moment, we are under influence of things that are really quite strange. And we've gone from like worrying about the influence of social media on our children now to having basically artificial intelligence robots that are capable of having conversations with each other and plotting and scheming in ways that their human programmers don't understand. And so while I know that some people think this is just such a wonderful thing and all of that stuff, I'm suggesting that a new god has descended on the planet. Before people really had a chance to get acquainted with or make peace with or reckon with or understand much about themselves or about the actual God, that is, you know, you might call it the creative intelligent force that is coordinating the universe. And it is possible for humans to do things that that very much exceed our authority. And we're kind of in a sorcerer's apprentice kind of situation now, where things are out of control. And the thing I'm kind of wringing my hands over, set my chair here, wringing my hands over, the one thing I learned from Rachel Maddow was to sit up straight, but nothing else, is that we know that there's a problem in the world right now. We're watching it unfold, and most people are standing like a deer in headlights and are not particularly intrigued by what's going on, not particularly curious, not really wondering what the situation, what the scenario is about. And it is painful to see, in particular, this the lack of curiosity about events as they are developing, and also a failure to understand the ways in which these things have influenced us and affected us in the past. I mean, for example, very few people know that in 2020 there was a computer at V-Word named MN908947 that you know, was sent around by email and then sent. I'll leave that for Planet Waves FM, since we are on YouTube on this, and you're not allowed to talk about these things inside the YouTube robot. Isn't that amazing? So the lack of curiosity is also a lack of curiosity about the human spiritual condition and what is going on. You are more open than most people. You are more intuitive than most people. You probably smoke better weed and drink better wine than most people, all Pisces traits. And if you're a musician, you're probably a pretty good musician, or at least you play with feeling, kind of like Ringo. But we are in dire straits, and we're reaching this what the developers have called a singularity point. Ooh, they're thrilled about it. Very, very rapidly. And what is being lost is our potential for our God connection. Events of 2021 were also involved with this. You know, 4 billion or so people dosed with a drug given with a needle that people in the trials reported had cut off their spiritual connection. Very, very strange situation going on. And my assessment of the crime scene of all of this is that it's largely taken place in Aries, but it's also taken place in Pisces, because Pisces has been the location of the anesthetic that has been administered over the past 15 years, this kind of grand, grand drug of hope and being entertained to death, associated with Neptune in Pisces. So you're at the end of a very long outer planet transit. I mean, they're all kind of long. Uranus goes through in 7 years, but but Neptune has been in Pisces since 2011, and so that was a big year, a very big year. And so one of the planets associated with Pisces has been in Pisces now for we're rounding the end of year 15, and the influence will continue well into early 2026 when Neptune finally makes its final ingress into Aries. So much of this reading is going to be a contrast of the astrology happening in and between, dancing between Aries and Pisces. Aries, a very important sign for everyone, an important sign for you because it represents your relationship to your money. It represents your relationship to your values. It represents your relationship to your principles. It's about the things that you own. It is about the assets that you have, both material assets and intellectual assets that you have. For example, it's not just about, your couch or your toolbox, but Aries for you represents your priorities, your values, and your sense of being. And one of my theories of sun sign astrology, and one of the approaches to sun sign astrology I use to make it into as vivid of a thing that I'm able to make it into without anyone's natal chart, without anyone's personal birth chart. None of this is being done with a personal birth chart, but it's being done with the experience of having read thousands of personal birth charts. So that said, is I work with Aries as the point of self-actualization. Wherever Aries shows up in a chart, that's in a solar chart, but also in a natal chart. I track this in people's natal charts as well, but it's very prominent in solar astrology, is that wherever Aries manifests is the house where you're going to be doing the most of your self-actualizing. So just to give you an example that is not Pisces, let's take the example of pencils keep flying off that desk. Sagittarius. In the Sagittarius solar chart, Aries turns up in the fifth place. This makes the fifth place very important to Sagittarians, because it means that Sagittarius will generally have a tendency to express itself through some form of creative, or to self-actualize through creative experience and the taking of risks. This is easier said than done, because Sagittarians tend to be somewhat conservative people, despite their, their freewheeling approach to life. Jonathan Kaner, continuous user of cocaine throughout his entire life, and once wrote him an email and said, "How are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm roller skating on ball bearings on a greased floor, like usual." But despite that, and despite his abundant generosity, was somewhat of a conservative person and reserved, and a very astute businessman. And so in the case of Jonathan Kaner, he found a way to self-actualize through the creative art of astrology. But if we go to the Pisces chart, if we look at what's going on, how this property expresses itself through Pisces, and it's different for all the signs and all the rising signs, if we look at how this property expresses itself for Pisces, and welcome to the first screen and screen reading for Pisces. Upping the game a little bit on video here at Planet Waves after 700 videos done. Here's Pisces. So it's in the first place. Can't see the one because I've drawn too many things over it, but you can see 12 and 2, and there's a one down there. And then Aries shows up in the second place. So the first place is I am, and the second place is I possess. But in the case of Aries, I possess also means I am. And I don't mean... Okay, I love my stuff as much as anybody, I like to keep it in me in service and put my talents to service, but to have Pisces having Aries as its second place is suggesting that you self-actualize through your principles, your values, your... What's another concept to say that it is possession, but it's also a quality of being self-possessed. So while Pisces is a very ethereal sign, it is very important to your grounding to be self-possessed, to be grounded in yourself, and to take full ownership and full accountability of who exactly you are in this incarnation and on this planet. Correspondingly, it's also very important that you be respectful of your finances. Now, I realize this is difficult, and it's difficult for kind of not necessarily so structurally oriented Pisces people, but very, very important that you be acutely aware of your financial situation at all times. And this is to suggest that there's going to be a lot of activity in your second house, which in the most material sense represents available cash. It represents the tools of your trade, and it represents the principles through which you express yourself in the world. And so it is easy to live in this world without any principles. In fact, it's much easier until karma catches up with you to exist in the world without any principles. For you, this is not a very good idea because of how prominently, powerfully placed Aries is for you. I mean, the second house is just a direct extension of the ascendant, of the rising sign of the first house, and always represents your the constitution that guides you, and to have Aries there is to say the constitution that guides you is to find yourself. And so for you, you know, finding yourself, you know, you make up a Pisces story about being a bard and traveling around and being like Basho and walking for 3 days to go to the temple to see the new moon, full moon rise over the temple. But, oh, it turns out that it was cloudy. So I think in one story, doesn't he walk for a month or 3 months to get to this temple to see the full moon rise? Yeah. Right, but also there's being grounded in who you are, what you do, and why you do it. Like, really, really grounded. And it's not so romantic, it's not so bardic, it is much more about a pragmatic reality, that is to say that you have a very, very strong dharma around making sure that you genuinely express the truth of who you are through all of what you do. And if I sound like I'm making a big deal about this, it's because while it's not really, I mean, you can see there's a little bit of activity drawn in. There's like so many things scribbled that I'm the only person who could possibly read them, unless you look really carefully and, you know, you're the smartest girl in the class. But soon, Aries is going to look like this. And by the way, since we're talking to Pisces for the first time in this reading, this is early 2026. Pisces is going to look like this, though most of these items are fast moving. Vesta moves fairly quickly, unless it goes retrograde, I don't know. And then Mercury and the nodes are moving in that direction. They'll be gone soon enough. And then Mars, that's pretty fast. And Pallas, that's pretty fast. The Sun, of course. And all that's going to be left after a little while in as we get into, you know, the late spring of 2026 is Nessus. A very important factor for Pisces that I will most surely be talking about sometime in the course of this reading. But the reason I was holding this up was not to show you Pisces. The reason I was holding this up was to show you what's going to be going on in Aries. And this includes your sort of modern ruling planet, Neptune, and then Saturn, which has been in Pisces for 2.5 years. And then a little, well, by this time it will have been. And then the Moon, that's real quick. But then Venus, okay, that's real quick. But then this conjunction of Chiron and Eris. Vitally important on a global historical scale. And then a conjunction of Saturn and Neptune in the first degree. I don't have that chart printed out, but just imagine both Neptune and Saturn with the same degree value of 0, 0, approximately 30, forming a conjunction in the first degree of Aries. That's the Aries point. So without getting your hopes up too high here, and with the caution that there's risks involved here, which are mitigated because Jupiter's entering Cancer, there is enormous potential for you financially with all of this stuff going on in your second house. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. But there is, when there are gains described like this, there are implied potential losses. And it is very rare, unless you just one day inherit a lot of money or win the lottery ticket, it is very rare for anyone to gain in a significant way without taking a significant risk of some kind. And so as you go through the next year, particularly this spring, where you'll be making some very important moves financially, because it's just how it's going to be, as you go through the next approximately 12 months, you will have to do so in a highly, unusually conscious way. Very, very conscious way. Set yourself up for the best possible success that you can have. The activities, events proceed very, very quickly over the next few months. So in the immediate sense, what we've got going on, and I wonder if I have my notes, my somewhat humorous notes from the most recent StarCast, and that would be if you're interested in a very tight rundown of the astrology through the month of April. Check the StarCast for March 6th. Actually, today I recorded it last night. Now, where on earth would that be? Where? Oh, where? Have my little notes gone? You can see. You can't exactly see, but you can somewhat see the state of my chart desk. I've got a lot of desks. I've got a whole one just for charts. They involve currently Venus retrograde in Aries, which will come back into Pisces, station direct in Pisces pretty soon, and then go back into Aries. Mercury in Aries, which will retrograde into Pisces, and then station direct, and then go back into Aries. And then Neptune currently in direct motion in Pisces, which will land in Aries, and then retrograde back into Pisces, and then back into Aries. This takes place over 9 months. And then Saturn is going to do the same thing. There's a lot of stuff going on between Pisces and Aries. And it's kind of like you kind of getting your stuff in Pisces, bringing it into Aries, coming back to Pisces, getting your stuff, like moving. And you are kind of moving from Pisces into Aries. With Saturn changing signs and Neptune changing signs, your orientation is certainly changing into a second house orientation, which is an orientation of a grounding in values and attitudes, and then also in your financial priorities. So change is implied, and a measure of risk is implied, but there is a lot that is working in your favor right now. And I would suggest making your moves slowly, being willing to take some loss to be able to have the right thing happen in the next chapter, being able to understand how to calculate a risk, how to understand the upside and the downside to things. But the most important thing that is implied, and you might say outright stated, and since I'm outright speaking, I will outright state it, that it is vitally, vitally important that you stay harmonized with your principles, with your true values. Not the hardware store, but the actual thing about you that makes you you. You know, there's this expression to sell out. You know that expression, to sell out? Well, what do you think that actually means? Like, what does it mean to sell out? I would say that it means to sell out your values and your principles, to have things that you claimed were important to you in previous times in your life, and what you might have thought of as more idealistic times in your life. And then it's like, well, the money's better. Everybody's got to make a living. Hey, we all got to eat. Oh, well, you know, these principles that I held, that was just me being a child. And I was, you know, if you're liberal when you're young, you know, you don't have a heart. And if you're not a conservative when you're old, you don't have a mind. But whatever, bullshit. Selling out is selling out your values. And you might want to declare again that your values are not for sale. You're not for sale. And you also might want to declare that that's not the goal. The goal is to be in this incarnation, to live your life as you are, to be the person who you actually are at all times in truth. And in truth means in your thoughts and also in your actions. As a journalist, I talk to a lot of people who are involved with organizations that do bad things. And I don't say anything to them. You know, I don't ask the secretary for Monsanto if she knows who she's working for. You know, if she knows that they, you know, dump tons of dioxin on towns and horse farms and into the Mississippi River. That's not my place, and it's not appropriate. But it is appropriate for me to say to you, what exactly are the values of the thing that you work for? What are the principles of the thing that you work for? And are those aligned with your values? If you have some opportunity, to what extent do you check in with yourself whether that opportunity is really about you? Whether that opportunity is a fair commentary on who you are? And whether it's something that you will be able to live with at the end of your life, or that as a child you would have thought that you could possibly have ever done. Could you have imagined yourself, working for Monsanto or whatever? It's highly unlikely that you'll be working for Monsanto, but you know what I mean. And usually it's not these big dramatic ways that people sell out. Most commonly it's the small, subtle, bit by bit, you know, dollar at a time, series of compromises that happen where, well, okay, this isn't so bad. I mean, I'll give you an example. Some of you know that I used to write for a magazine called Chronogram. And one day, this had to be around maybe 2015, my old friend Amara Projansky, the co-publisher of Chronogram, somebody I knew since she was 17 years old, a long time, like 30 years, took me out to lunch and said, "All right, no more investigative reporting in Chronogram." Hmm. And I thought, well, all right, I cover gender, I cover other social issues, I cover astrology. I don't need to do that type of investigative reporting. And they were very upset that I had taken on a group of land conservancies and that I was challenging a university about its contaminated dormitories. And in a sense, I sold out for the only time in my life. I made that compromise, and the thing to do would have been to walk away. But I didn't want to walk away from my readers. I ran my horoscope in the publication. Well, it turned out that the people who ran this magazine had absolutely no principles of their own, and that it was an organization as corrupt as anything I have ever covered in its own small way, in its own penny ante, you know, community magazine way, $1 million organization, but not that big in the scheme of things, as corrupt as anything I had ever found. And I made a small compromise that I didn't think was a compromise of my values, because I have many other things I can write about, but it bit me on the ass. And more than that, it was an indication that the people in charge had no commitment to truth. What's investigative reporting but getting to the truth of a controversial matter? There's no investigative reporting about, like, what's your favorite perfume? There's no investigative reporting about, like, oh, what a wonderful Airbnb that is. Investigative reporting is getting to the truth of the matter. So this is really the first time I'm actually thinking this through out loud. The compromise was on the matter of truth. That is what it means to have the second house in Aries. That is what that matter of, you might say, like, kind of like a Supreme Court ruling in the matter of truth. Ah, but this is a meaningful thing. And the truth is your truth. The truth is your reality. What is real? What is necessary? What is absolutely, genuinely the right thing for you? Now, I know that we live in a world where there's all kinds of compromises being made all kinds of times, and I'm not saying that that everything is perfect, but I'm here to caution you that there may be opportunities where you can compromise, and I think that it is very important that you make an eminently thorough investigation of any possible compromise that you might be called upon to make, because you have nothing but your truth. You have nothing but the very core essence of who you are. You are that person. And the way that you find yourself is that you find yourself through exploring and expressing your truth. You find yourself, you self-actualize in the style of Aries. And right now, you got to think of this as a huge pile of chips on the table. This is the and there are two major conjunction type events going on in and among all of this. The first of them being Neptune and Saturn on the Aries point, the first degree of Aries, which is the kind of like the degree right after the last degree of your sign. We could put it right exactly there. And when you have an event like that so prominent in your chart and also on the Aries point, that's a lot of astrology. That is a lot going on. So there is a tremendous potential contained in this. But Neptune has an insecurity factor, and Saturn might have a depressive factor. But if you put them together, there is an alchemical factor. There is a synthesis factor. Studying history and studying people and events with strong Neptune-Saturn pairings, whether it's a square, opposition, or conjunction, usually that, and I haven't checked the subtle aspects, to, you know, for things like the development of chemicals or what have you, The way to work with Saturn and Neptune is synthesis. Synthesis means taking certain known elements and compounds and making something completely new through potentially inventing a process. For example, a lot of chemicals are made in a pressurized chemical reactor. There was a day synthesized, right, that don't exist in nature and would never and could never possibly exist in nature. Unless they were put into that chemical reactor with that and those exact amounts, those exact congeners and isomers, and cooked at that temperature, at that pressure, for that period of time, you wouldn't have that chemical. Well, that's Saturn Neptune in the in Aries, on the Aries point in the second house. So there's something that is like the formation of a whole new set of ideas and of concepts and of precepts, a whole new set of realities that you are forming. And so another thing to think about is the way in which the truth of which I speak, this personal truth to which I'm saying that you simply must remain committed, is more of a quest for truth, and that there's going to be another layer to this reality. There's going to be another dimension to this whole thing, where you're going to make discoveries that you had no possible way to expect to make, no possible way to know things are going to happen, and you're going to make discoveries about yourself and what's important to you in a short time that you had no way to even possibly vaguely conceive of. And that's because this has never happened. Just to give you an idea, the conjunction of Neptune and Saturn in Aries has only occurred four times since 1 BC. We had to go back to 1 BC to investigate this. And 1 BC, we used two computer programs to do it, and we got the same exact results from very different sources. But so four times, it's happened four times since 1 BC. And then the conjunction of Eris and Chiron in Aries, which I'm going to break down in a second. Eris and Chiron in Aries last happened in 1971, 72. And then before that, to find a Chiron Eris conjunction in Aries, you have to go back to the 15th century. Basically, back to the 1400s, and I think I've got the astrology laptop closed right now. But in approximately like 1430 and 1480 or something, were the last two conjunctions of Chiron and Eris in Aries, and so we are talking about things that are not only on a on the scale of like once in a lifetime. We're talking about things that are on the scale of a multi-century, you have to look on a multi-century scale to find anything vaguely like it. The one exception being the contact of Eris and Chiron in early 1970s. And for those of you who are old enough to have lived through the early 1970s, it was a very distinct and special time in history. And if you look at the history of the early 1970s, it was a time of tremendous change. There was a lot of very positive change. There was a value on growth and self-actualization. I bet there were more people in therapy by per capita, therapy and group therapy in the early 1970s than at any other time in any other place in history where such a thing as group therapy and individual therapy existed. Many, many, many things have their point of origin as the era of the Chiron Eris conjunction. Many things. Like I had a list somewhere, and I don't know where to find it, but I could recreate it. But it's amazing, and it was an extremely fertile time in history. Now, what exactly is this about? Like, what's the issue here? So, if you're vaguely familiar with my work, you know that I've had a lot to say about what I'm calling full digital conditions, and now what I'm really understanding to be this evolution of full digital conditions, which kind of begins with the launch of ChatGPT. which is a deep language-based model, artificial intelligence, leaning toward general artificial intelligence, and essentially the machines taking over their own bit. They're right now, as I speak, on March 6th, there's a launch going on to the moon that includes a diversity of interconnected robots, where no human intervention is not only necessary, but human intervention is not possible. These systems are designed to completely troubleshoot, repair, heal, upgrade, update themselves, rolling around on the surface of the moon. This is going on right now. They're launching. This is X. This is Elon Musk. President Musk is launching his own rocket ship to the moon. And the amazing thing about this is that the systems are completely self-regulating. This has all been going on in Aries. The singularity point described is the Eris-Chiron conjunction in Aries, which will stretch out over a period of about a year from now, with a wide margin on either side. So the epicenter, which we're now in, the epicenter is basically a year from now until the spring of 2026, and then the penumbra, the shadow of influence, stretches out for probably about 3 to 4 years in either direction. So it's kind of the post-COVID phase, morphing into this kind of HAL 9000 phase. What else can I say? We have been stripped of our beingness. We have been stripped of our humanity through constant overexposure to digital conditions. We haven't all been stripped of all of our humanity, but I'll tell you where I feel it the most personally. And I mean, and I think I remain pretty well incarnated, and I wake up in the morning and I devote myself in service to humanity and not the robot every single day. So I am not the possession of the robot. I am devoted to you. I am here to figure this out. I mean, it'd be much easier to just figure it out for me, but if I have to, you know, do it like 12 times, like every week, and then, you know, an extra 5 or 10 times a year, good heavens. Let me tell you where I find where I notice. So way, not far away, but somewhere in the hills, I have a storage unit, a nice big one. It's a 10 by 30, beautiful. It's nice and organized. It's got a huge table in it and file cabinets, and it's very quiet, except for a little bit of traffic. It's very quiet, and a lot of my old stuff is there. Props from the Book of Blue project, the lighting from the Book of Blue project, some material from previous households, etc. But also there is a very big part of my poetry archive. And so sometimes on a quiet afternoon when the weather's warm, I'll take a half-hour drive and open up the thing, and I will sit in silence with my old books and my old notes and reflect on my life. And that really means reflecting on the person who I was in the 1980s and the 1990s, where most of this record was created. And it's a very different person. You would recognize me. I wouldn't come off like the College Young Republicans, but my own sense of inner quest is what comes through in that space. I can almost feel the ghost of who I was looking through the papers, much of them handwritten, some of them typed on my first computer, in search of the previous person who I was, trying to make sense of who that person was, and in a way, practicing a kind of a soul retrieval. I'm gonna pause for a second. Hopefully this works. Where's the pause button here? I haven't done this a lot of times. Come on, the pause button should be easy to find. Ah, there it is. Pause. Hold on 1 second. A digital instant, as I used to call it. I'm now reading for approximately the fourth time a book that I discovered when I was in university. I was the kind of young person who was on an active spiritual path. I kind of inherited something of the spiritual legacy of the 60s and 70s and read a lot of books by Alan Watts and was on the way to, but hadn't started, A Course in Miracles, but I knew that it existed. It seemed like quite a strange thing, and kind of is. And in that era, I encountered this book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I was maybe 18 or 19 years old, and this is kind of the book like everyone knows they should read, and and they think it's about Zen in some way, which it's not. It's got nothing to do with Zen. But it's got something to do with something. And talking about my visits to my storage locker, it's not exactly a locker, it's kind of a facility, a little too small warehouse, which, by the way, includes the records of my reporting on PCBs and dioxin in the 1990s. What this book seems to be about is a motorcycle journey from Minneapolis to San Francisco and back that the author undertook with his son. But what's actually going on is that he is riding through the territory where he lived and rode and camped up high in the mountains, particularly in Montana, before he was declared insane by a court and subjected to something like 70 electroconvulsive shock therapy treatments. And in the course of those treatments, his entire previous personality was basically erased. That's what ECT does to people. It erases their prior personality. Now, I have not had my personality erased, but what I'm getting at is that we have kind of all had our personalities erased by exposure to digital technologies, and the extent to which you're able to hold on to certain memories, memory fragments, personality structures, and also able to retrieve those from your past, and the event that some people were able to stay in touch with certain things from their past matters. And some people have been more successful than others. Some have managed to stay in touch with who you are, and you may be one of them. But what I'm proposing here is that a quest is necessary. And it turns out the person that Persig was, he gave a name. The name is Phaedrus. Phaedrus is the name of one of the Socratic dialogues. It's called the Phaedrus. And why he named it that is another story. Why he named himself that is another matter. But this person was a really brilliant philosopher, and particularly studied, developed the philosophy of aesthetics, the study of quality, and the investigation into the nature of beauty. This is what Phaedrus did. And he kind of loses his mind in an attempt to define quality. What we think of as a simple thing, you know, a good quality pencil. This is a good quality pencil. It's a barrel Prismacolor. Wow. No, not much more complicated. And he ends up, he was a college teacher, taught rhetoric. A lot of the book takes place in a classroom at a state college in Bozeman, Montana. He ends up in a mental ward for months, going through daily court-ordered electroshock therapy. And my proposition of life in the 21st century, and this we could take this back quite a long way, but the exposure has never been more intense. My proposition is that we're all being subjected to a kind of electroshock therapy through exposure to the digital environment that is having a way of erasing who we are. It's taking away who we are. It is changing our attitudes. It's changing our values. It's changing our approach to life. It's changing the entire field, the entire concept of having respect for existence itself and respect for who we are. And this is going on, as I have documented many times through looking at the charts of events, it's going on in Aries. You can see many, many huge turning points going on, including the disaster of 2016 and Trump getting elected in 2016 under the conjunction of Uranus, which is way down here now, about to be. Yeah, it's right, it's basically there. And Eris in 2016, where things really, really felt like they were going out of control. And what I'm suggesting is that all of this, first of all, major awakening is going on in Aries. Chiron and Eris conjunct is the astrology of the awakening. That's the aspect that, after which I named the 2025 annual readings, the awakening. Well, what's the awakening aspect? The awakening aspect is the conjunction of Chiron and Eris. And the pairing is a little bit like this. The disembodying, de-individuating kind of erasure of the individual person is Eris. This has been going on at full strength and full throttle since the introduction of commercial radio in the 1920s. We were de-individuated and re-tribalized through a kind of electroconvulsive shock therapy known as radio, wonderful as it was, had a way of really bringing things far away into people's homes and so on, but it totally changed the nature of what a person is and the nature of what society is, the nature of what groups are, all erased, rewritten, changed. Overnight, McLuhan uses the word overnight by radio. The self that was created through the 500-year development of books, which commenced at the last set of Chiron-Eris conjunctions in Aries in the 1430s, 1440s, 1460s, going on with the introduction of the Gutenberg Press, history told in this book by McLuhan, his second book, unraveled overnight by the introduction of electrical mass communication media. And now we're at the next major watershed of that, where we're being basically unraveled overnight, erased, recreated, redefined by mass communication technology that is completely, completely, ridiculously involving. I can't go to the webcam on this, but I can, you know, all right, I understand that I'm a content creator, but, you know, I mean, it is a normal life to live with, you know, like this much electronica surrounded by this much, you know, I do a lot of digital art and all that stuff, but people who are not involved in the creation of material for the public in service, we live surrounded by, and the most pernicious, insidious one of all, I can't find it, is the iPhone. The thing that contains the movie studio, the photo studio, the writing shop, the music lab, and the digital darkroom, and the printing press, and the email, and all the notes, and the bank accounts, and it's one little box that people carry around when, you know, honest to God, not that long ago at all, like, this is what we used. Think about that. And this had one kind of effect. You're sitting alone at night, you know, you open your book up and you, like, feel the beautiful paper, and whoever sent me this, thank you. And you can smell the paper, and it's a very nice paper, quality paper. And you're writing in the privacy of your own space, in the privacy of your own headspace. What digital technology did and continues to do is not only absolutely, completely dissolve the privacy as a reality and as an idea. Privacy as a, like, there is such a thing as private. We don't have that at all anymore. The minute the electricity was turned on, privacy was erased. Particularly, look, the night is turned to day, first of all, by light bulbs. And then the telephone rolls out right around the same time, and everyone's listening to everyone else's phone calls. And if you multiply that times itself, you end up with digital technology, which is like the radio and telephone to the 100th power, a lot more than by itself. And what I'm suggesting here is that the you that you need to go on this quest for is the you who you were prior to all of the advents of all of this digital technology. What was the nature of who you are? How have you changed? Now, I say this knowing that there are quite a few people who boldly make themselves into new people. They declare their previous life over. They give themselves a new name. They move to a new city. They get divorced, and they show up in a new place as a single person and start a whole new relationship life. Some completely ditch their families and their children, and they write everybody out of their life, and they're like, ta-da, the new me. Or people go from career to career, and they're like, ooh, the new me. And they tear up their resume and they start all over again. And that is not my approach to things. Personally, my approach is to bring something I've learned from every phase of my life into every phase of my life. And I'm sitting here today talking about a book that had its most profound effect on me when I was 18 years old. And it continues to. It is absolutely amazing, but requires very, very slow, careful, thoughtful reading. I have probably read the bookmark. My bookmark is here. Not even. I'm halfway through, and it's taken me a month. I'm reading a couple of pages a day. That's the way to read this book. And that's the way to retrieve your soul. Your soul is not retrieved like in one session where you go in and some shaman in Long Island, or you know, in St. Paul, or someone's like, I'm a shaman. Look, I have a shingle hanging out outside my door. I'm now going to go and retrieve your soul. I will reach into the dark abyss of the 12th house. And let's talk about Nessus. Speaking of soul retrieval, so when all is said and done, and the whole shebang passes through, even before then, when things really move from Pisces into Aries, and this stage of the process is all wrapped up by this, pretty much early 2026. But then the fireworks continue in Aries, then this constant new commingling of elements and tectonic forces moving. But in Pisces, primarily where you reside, we'll be left with Nessus. Nessus, the third centaur, not an asteroid, not a planet. The third centaur, wildly elliptical orbit, very long orbit, 135 years or something like that. Almost as long as Neptune, or possibly longer, is about taking responsibility for your existence. A key phrase of Nessus is the buck stops here. The buck stops with you, meaning that you're the one who deals. You're the one who addresses, you're the bottom line of your own life. Your choices, your actions, it all comes back to you. And many people live as if it doesn't all come back to them. And it's easy to hide in service and say, well, I'm just who I am, what I am, doesn't matter. I just do what I do, or the way we say about some like patently evil people. Well, they do some good things. You can't see, you know, this presenter who I've exposed lying 43 times, and someone says, "Why are you so hard on so and so?" I'm like, "Well, how about I've caught them lying 16 times about some of the most important issues? Obviously, they're either brain damaged, which they probably are, or they're a complete patent fucking liar." My point is that who you are is up to you. Who you are is always your choice. And you are the based on your initial relationship with Creator, whatever you came here to do, assuming that this whole experiment is not just basically some kind of cosmic plasma jumping into consciousness. It's completely friggin' wild that the stuff that a coffee cup is made out of, similar to my body, a bunch of atoms, it's like, oh, wow, I'm like dancing around on a video camera for you, but my cup is just sitting on the table. But pulled back the wall, there's bugs, there's mice, there's mold growing. Everything seems to pop into life on this planet. I don't know how you got here. I don't really know how I got here. But all I can say is that as far as I'm concerned, this astrologer speaking to this astrology fan, who you are is always up to you. Nessus and Pisces, your buck, meaning the buckhorn, at the poker table, which means you deal. When you get the buck, you deal. When you pass the buck, you don't deal. The buck stops with you. Who you are is and always was your choice. And on that note, I conclude this reading. The reading called The Awakening is, it's the best thing I've ever done. I did the signs in order, written, and by the time I got to Pisces, you would think I had already written 75,000 words in 3 months. And you would think, well, I'll just kind of dash this one off. I've said everything I need to say already. Well, I got going and it was 9,000 words and just getting more fun to write and getting better and better. And I know that, self-praise is no real recommendation, but I'm saying that it's really a really great thing. And I suggest that you check it out, print it out and carry it around with you and keep it in your personal book. Where's my, I've got another one of those things. I love notebooks. Make it your own, make it your own. We include this chart or something very close to it with your reading. Print that out and make it your own. Make your astrology your own. You will love doing it. You will, as you make it your own, you make it real, and then you start to get the real benefits from it. Meantime, I am here to help get you oriented, to help guide you, to help expand the concept of what astrology is and what it might do, and the beauty of this kind of very condensed philosophical system. So inspiring, as are you. Thank you for your business and your trust. Lots of love. And by the way, please say hi to your cats and dogs. Bye for now.